these old things.
That's actually amazing.
These are customs, dog. Because I shot my special last week in Dallas. So whenever I do a special, I do a custom. You know, I'm a sneakerhead.
Yeah, yeah. Are you going? You rolling? Okay, yeah.
So, yeah, I shot my special in Dallas. So whenever I do a special, I always do, like, a custom shoe.
You always have, like, fly shoes?
Always.
Because I see you in the gym every time. You have, like, how many shoes do you have?
Probably between 250, 300, but, like, fire shoes. Like, I'm a sneakerhead. So, it's, like, I collect them, and it all stems from childhood.
So, yeah, before we get into this, for those of you who don't know, Brendan Schaub, ladies and gentlemen, you do everything.
I'm exhausted.
Yeah. And this is one thing before because I want to kind of talk to you a little bit. I've never actually had this conversation with you, like, because I've talked to you many times in my gym, but never actually had this kind of conversation with you, like, just in real life about your upbringing, your childhood, where you've been, where you've come from.
Yep.
But before we get into that, I want to say, like, the number one thing that strikes me about you as a person after knowing you for, I don't know, like a year and a half, 2 years now?
Yeah.
You've been at the gym, Zoo Culture, but you definitely seem to be, and like myself, a lot, at least on the internet, like a little bit misunderstood, maybe just even in the world a little misunderstood.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense of, I mean, we talked this one time and you were saying how you have so much like business sense and you have so much like businesses you've created. Obviously all the podcasts you've done, the stuff you produce, I don't even think people understand or know about how much. But have you ever struggled, like, do you struggle, like, growing up, or do you struggle now with people, like, seeing you, obviously, your physical stature, like, you were a fighter, you did all these things, like, you might be looked at as some people as, like, a meathead, obviously not the people who really know you.
Sure.
But I just find it interesting, because I don't think there's a lot of people who know, you know, because you were joking with me, you're like, you know, someone was thinking, like, does your brother do all this stuff, set up all these businesses?
Yeah.
So I guess my question is, like, where did all that come from? Like, obviously, the competitive nature, I think I know about you that you have it so strongly.
For sure.
But where along the line in your life where you're like, I want to own my own stuff? Because this is like, for people listening, everyone, like, they want to be a UFC fighter, right?
Yes.
Or they want to be a podcaster, or they want to do social influencing, or they want to be a fitness person, or they want to be a whatever on the internet. And to go from where you went in sports and in competitive fighting and then like doing everything and also understanding the back end and how it works and what you need to do to succeed is crazy. So I just want to understand, like, where did that start for you to start to realize like you had to understand those things to be truly successful?
Yeah. So I think two parts there. So A, the misunderstanding, I'm sure you get it too, right? Because the way I found your gym was in the height of the pandemic. You know, everything, you know, we're in LA, for those of you who don't know, we're in LA. So it was like North Korea here, shut down.
Yeah.
Nothing's open.
Yeah.
I was like, Dad, I need to work out. I need to do something. And then one of my boys, one of my features on the road with me, Chappelle, goes, dude, this someone sent me this gym, says you need to go up there. This guy's similar to Brendan. And so he sends it to me.
Yeah.
And I was like, Zoo Culture. I'm like, dude, that's like a mile from my fucking house.
Yeah.
He's like, go up there, man. And I was like, fuck it. So I go up and I'm like, holy shit, this is my vibe. Then you and I met, and I was like, oh, shit. Yeah, it was like that Spider-Man meme.
We
were boys right away.
Yeah.
So I think as far as, like, you know, people maybe misunderstanding, I don't worry too much about that at all because people who know me know what's up.
Of course.
And then as far as, like, the work ethic stuff and owning your own stuff, my dad, you know, I'm the dumb one of the family. So my brother's a computer programmer. My dad is a computer programmer, started his own company.
But he was a police officer, you told me, right?
No, my father-in-law is a police officer.
My bad. Okay, your father-in-law. Yeah.
So my father created, like, basically, like, any of the high-security email, encrypted emails that, like, the government uses or, like, jewelry stores, or, like, sensitive material, he designed all that, like, in early, like, late 80s, like, early 90s. So my dad's wicked smart.
So growing up, I'm the dumb one.
So I'm the dumb one. But my dad is like the ultimate businessman. The ultimate. So when I was 10, I grew up in Venice in the summers because my uncle had a house there. So I'd go to like Gold's Gym. I grew up in that. And he was a professional bodybuilder. So I grew up in that atmosphere.
But wait, who was a professional bodybuilder?
My uncle.
Your uncle, okay.
So I grew up in the summers being around my uncle who's insanely successful and a crazy businessman. And then my dad too. And I remember I was a bodybuilder.
Okay.
And I remember my dad, I was like 10 or 12 and we're on the beach. And my dad's like, again, I'm 12, dude. We're on the beach. And he goes, you know what the difference between me and you is? I go, what? He goes, I'm making money right now. And it was like a Thursday afternoon while we're on the beach. I'm like, all right. You know, I was 12. I was like, what the fuck?
Wait, your dad said that? Yeah. Like, your dad,
like,
your father.
It was like a flex, but him also being like, you got to get to a level where.
But you were 12.
I was 12.
What the fuck?
That's... He's like, I'm making money right now. I was like, okay.
You were 12 years old. He said that
12,
to you.
12, yeah.
Wow, I love it.
Yeah, but that's just him instilling me like you're chilling, having a good time. I'm also chilling, having a good time, but I'm also making money.
Dude. He's kind of teaching you something, teaching showing me, you something. Yeah.
So I think my dad's just always been like that, you know, that hustler, man. And like that work ethic. I can't stand it, especially now that I'm a comic. And Rogan to say this, or other like Kreischer or Segura, be like, yeah, he'll take his professional athlete work ethic, and you know that's what he brings to comedy. That's why he got so far so fast. But I could have been a UPS man. I could have worked for Best Buy, Starbucks. Like, that work ethic is, no matter what I was doing, that comes with everything.
And you think that was instilled through your father?
110%.
Any other people in your life that was?
My uncle Pax, who passed away just because he was, you know, he was, they called him Mr. Venice. He was 6-time Mr. Universe. My aunt was 4-time Mrs. Universe. So, like, when I was like from ages 8 to like 21, I was there in the summer, and he had me up at 5 a.m. and it's egg whites and run on the beach, and we go to Gold's twice a day. And it's just almost like that Arnold, like, you know, like pump and iron lifestyle.
The best.
Yeah, just this work ethic that was just like, this is how it is, man.
Is this how you got into sports? Because I know you were like active in football.
Yeah, super active. So in sports, I grew up in a predominantly black neighborhood in Aurora, Colorado.
Yeah.
And the only way to be like cool is to be good at sports. I hadn't be gifted.
So wait, when did you move there? Because you were in Venice when you were 12.
I would only go there in the summers. So the school year I was in Aurora, Colorado.
Okay.
So my school when I was a kid was always in Aurora, Colorado. So in Aurora, like, it was predominantly black neighborhood. So like the only way to be like cool or get any attention is to be good at sports.
Yeah.
So this is how much of a psycho I am. I was athletically gifted. I realized like I was fast and could catch and had coordination. But we'd play in the grass, and the girls would like watch us. And I realized the guys who were good at football got the girls.
Of course.
I was young.
Of course.
So I was like, man, I keep slipping. How gangster is this? In fourth grade, I brought I wore my cleats to school. So if I'd walk through the hallways and it was like clanking, everyone's making fun of me. I'm like, all right, bitch, wait to recess. Wait till we get to fucking recess.
Wait. Wait, how old are you in fourth grade?
I mean, I don't know what is fourth grade. You know what I'm saying?
How old are we in fourth grade?
10?
10?
10, 11?
So
I knew. I was like, all right, bitch, keep talking shit. And they're like making fun of me because the teacher's like, you can't.
You know what's funny about this right now? The fact that you're a sneakerhead?
Super sneaker.
Now, but you were flexing back then. You had cleats.
And everyone's making fun of me. And then recess came and your boy.
You're like, just wait.
Your boy went off. I was like, damn. It's so funny now, is it? So I wore those every day for the rest of the year. But what's great about that, my mom loved it because we didn't grow up with a lot of money. And because they were the molded cleats, and when you wear them not on grass, they wear down. So by the end of the year, they wore down. My mom's like, see, you got shoes now. So like, I just wore those McGregor cleats.
So that turned into
shoes.
But at this age, like, it wasn't, I mean, you obviously weren't out here like having sex. You were like,
no,
you were just trying to impress them because like they thought it was cool.
Friends.
They thought it was cool.
And I was like the token, cool, athletic white guy. And then to me, I was like, oh, this is, like, all right, this is what I'm good at, so that's what I'm going to do. But then on the flip side of that, my mom was always really, like, artsy and funny, so she wanted for me to be, like, Adam Sandler or Chris Farley.
Yeah.
So she wanted me to be on Saturday Night Live, so it was this weird dynamic where I was the funny, like, athletic guy, you know, but I was, it's almost a blessing and curse because I was good at athletics. Like, that was my focus, and it took me some great things, man. But
you almost did the NFL, right?
Yeah, so I had a cappuccino with the Buffalo Bills, and then they're like, "Yeah, they're like, we're all set on slow white guys." Like, say less. And then I got my stuff and got out of there. But you know, you had a shot at the NFL, man. A lot of people can't say that.
Yeah, it's dope. Yeah. You know, it's funny because a lot of people I know who like would have a shot would totally like play that up so much.
Not me.
Yeah, no. You don't really give a fuck.
Because I've been there. So
I know guys who lie about like, "Yeah, I was gonna go to the NFL."
Yeah, I got hurt, man. No, I literally they were just like, "We're all set on white tight ends, dude."
Yeah, like you're good.
I was like, all right.
So
broke my heart though. But those are like life lessons because it was like, you know, as a kid, like my heroes were like Junior Seau and all these NFL guys. And I thought, God, if I just get the NFL, it's going to be like, you know, Willy Wonka's chocolate factory. Like when that kid gets in the factory, like I'm going to be like, this is it, baby.
Like I made it.
And it was not like that. My not experience like that. Is more like Vince Papale from Invisible when you get there and they don't have your name on your jersey. And I was like, dude, you spelled my name wrong.
They're like, we don't care.
He was like, does it matter?
Just put the fucking thing on.
I was like, all right, dude.
So when did you start to find like your love for comedy? Because I know that like you started to get into fighting and you did jiu-jitsu for like, well, how many months before you started fighting? 6 months or something like that?
I was doing jiu-jitsu when I was playing football at University of Colorado just to stay in shape. And then was like, had this weird knack for it. It was like a natural.
Yeah, like how do you go from like, you're playing football, you're doing jiu-jitsu. I understand jiu-jitsu obviously, and then fighting. But you did it. Didn't you do an amateur fight like within like, I don't know, like six, seven months?
I did Golden Gloves box in the tournament within like 3 months of training and ended up winning it. And
training then, boxing?
No, I wasn't even training. I was like, I was boxing because I was doing MMA, but I wasn't like focused on boxing. And then my boy Shane Carwin, who became UFC heavyweight champ, he goes, hey, that Golden Gloves, because we always talk about Golden Gloves boxing, which back in the day was a big deal. It was like the biggest amateur tournament in the nation. And he goes, hey, that Golden Gloves is next Saturday. I'm like, yeah, no, it's crazy, right? He's like, yeah, I signed you up for it. I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, dude.
How much boxing experience did you have?
3 months of like sparring with him and like not much.
Fucking around the gym, yep, hitting pads.
Not much. And then I was selling supplements door to door at the time. Because remember, I got cut from the NFL. I was selling hard nutrition supplements with my boy, Brad Pyatt, who created Muscle Farm.
Whoa. Yeah. He created Muscle Farm after that, obviously.
Yeah, that's what turned into Muscle Farm. So what, me and Brad started together with Hard Nutrition. I went on to do my thing. He went on to start Muscle Farm.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
So
me and him were selling door to door.
But like, where?
So I was doing that when I got cut. So I was selling supplements door to door, but then I would train in MMA and jiu-jitsu. And then my boy signed me up for Golden Gloves. And then I remember I was like, I kind of want to fight. My dad was like, you're an idiot. Like, you have a double major. Like, what are you doing?
You double majored in what?
Business and sociology.
Okay. Yeah.
So my dad was like, use your degree, you idiot. And I was like, no, I know. Let me just try this. And I told my dad, I said, because he didn't come to anything. Like, in my jiu-jitsu tournaments before that. He's like, if you come to Golden Gloves and I lose, I'll work for you. I'll do whatever the fuck you want.
Yeah.
He's like, all right. So he came. I just happened to.
What does your mom think about all this stuff?
Comedy, my mom like has always been so supportive. She's like, I've been telling you this since you were fucking 4 years old. You're gonna be a stand-up comic.
Yeah.
So she's all about that. The fighting, she hated. She came to my first professional fight ever, which was in Broomfield, Colorado, and I knocked the guy out in like, I don't know, like 26 seconds. And I saw my mom like, Mama, wasn't that great? She's like, yeah. How many more do you have tonight? I'm like, what? No, that's it. She's like, I drove all the way here for that shit.
For that,
like,
quick knockout.
Yeah, that's good. She's like, oh, fuck this. Never came again.
That's never, so like, fucking funny. But
did she pay for parking? But did she not want?
But did she not want you to do it? Or she just was like.
She was just like, what are you doing?
Why,
like,
are you doing it?
And they didn't
it?
Think there was money in it. You know, like, what are you doing?
Yeah. Was there money in your fighting career?
As far as like paydays that I got from the UFC, not really. Well, depends. Like, for the average person, like, oh, you made whatever, you know, 40 grand to fight fucking Nogueira? Like, that's crazy. It's not, though.
So what was your, I wanted to ask you this. This is a question I really wanted to know.
But before you go, my money came from sponsorship. So, like, I would get, let's say, 50 grand to fight a monster to fight him. But my brand deals were, like, six figures.
Okay, so let me ask you this, and my other question, I'll wait. So you, like, at the time, what year was this in fighting?
To like 2012 to 2011 to 2014.
Who were the most popular fighters at that time? Do you remember?
Brock, like, Lesnar, JDS, Cain Velasquez, Jon Jones.
So you were a heavyweight, obviously.
Mm-hmm, top 10.
So did a lot of those fighters get good money brand deals, like, because of, like, how did you work that?
Some of them did. I've just always had a knack for marketing. So I was like,
and you did it yourself. Like, they came to you, or you came to them?
And then I would pitch them on it. And then I'd be like, let me show you what I could do marketing-wise. I'd cut a promo for them. Or I would just go over the top. And they'd be like, all right, we're in.
Like, so you were selling yourself?
Always.
Do you think, like, a lot of fighters missed out on that, like, in your time? I know now people know that that's a thing because, like, social media.
Even now, they're not great with it. But it's also, like, what's sad is they shouldn't have to do that. They, like, a lot of these fighters should be getting paid for what they're supposed to do, which is win fights.
Yeah.
But now, because Conor McGregor came, who's this fucking unicorn, which isn't even fair to say unicorn. He's a green elephant amongst the rest of them.
Yeah.
In a circus.
He just knew how to fucking make it entertaining.
He had the talent, God-given talent. He's a once-in-a-lifetime type of fighter. Then B, he was just fucking wicked at marketing. So then people see him make all this money and be the face of the UFC. So then these guys are like, oh, I'm going to do that. But it's not natural to them.
Yeah.
But then the UFC, it's a double-edged sword because the UFC is like, look how much this guy's making. Be like Conor. So you have these guys where it's not in their, you know, kind of what they do. It's not in their wheelhouse. And they're like talking shit. And like, what are you doing?
Do you think UFC fighters are underpaid?
100. This is where it gets dicey because They are and they aren't. Like, you know, the report just came out. The UFC had their biggest quarter ever, which is good for them, man.
I love the UFC, by the way. I fucking love it.
Dude, my business around the UFC. Yeah. I love the UFC. Yeah. I'm a UFC alumni. There's no
fucking incredible. Nothing I
ride with or fuck with harder than the UFC.
Yeah.
So when it comes to pay, like, I think it's easy for the common person to be like, oh, dude, they're underpaying them. They should be paying them this. But at the end of the day, and Dana says the same thing, you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. I don't know what goes on behind the scenes. I don't know how much they're paying for the venues. I don't know any of that.
Yeah.
Now, could they pay more? I assume, but I don't know. But what I do know is when these fighters try to start unions and all that stuff, and they've reached out to me. Big boys have reached out to me, like, jump on board. And when you go through it, you're like, oh, you guys aren't.
Well, here's the thing I know. I mean, I know Dane. I don't know him super, super well, but it does make sense, like, on the business side of things, that they've also built that name and that brand so large, and it's so, like, successful the that brand's now.
The bigger than any fighter.
The brand is so, exactly. So now at this point.
Just like the NFL.
Yeah, so I do understand. It's like, okay, you can't ask for more for sure, but at the same time, you also have to respect the value that the platform that you're fighting
correct.
On now.
Correct. And, you know, I think it's easy to knock Dana on the fighter pay and stuff like that, but, you know, I don't think I'd do anything different if I'm him. You know what I'm saying? Like, go tell fucking Steve Jobs before he died, like, dude, you need to pay these workers more. He's like, but why?
He's like, yo, I also created, like,
yeah, what do you want me to do? I like created a life
trillions of jobs. Yeah.
So for Dana, it's like, what are you talking about? I gave these guys a platform. Yeah. Like, I created all this.
Have you ever had beef with Dana White?
We've had beef. We've had beef. And it's weird because I was talking to this big manager who works with the biggest guys. And it's so weird because, like, we had beef, like, I don't know, like 4 years ago. But, you know, he's worth all the money in the world. I'm doing good. Like, you know, I look at it like, now to backtrack, when I left the UFC, because one of the reasons I left, when they signed that Reebok deal, all my sponsorships went away. So
at that point, fighters could not have their own brand deals, right?
And so you just get a payment from Reebok.
Is it still that way?
Yes.
Still that way. So you're
paid higher, but you can't have any outdoor sponsors.
So how come I see people like Ngannou and stuff, people have like Venom
Monster
shorts?
They have like Monster or Crypto.com or something like that.
Yeah.
That's a UFC sponsor. They like only the UFC selects who they want to work with and you get paid a little more, but still not like back in the day.
Got it. So back in the day, there was more money for fighters who were more ambitious with their own brand deals. Yep. Okay.
Yep. And they got rid of that because they didn't want to look like NASCAR and shit like that.
Yeah. That'd
they
wanted
more
crazy.
Professional, which obviously they sold for whatever, $3 billion. So they know what the fuck they're doing. But at the time for me, I had a chip, dude, I had a stack of Pringles on my shoulder. Because when I retired, I was like, watch what I'm going to do. But that gave me the fire to get to where I was going to get. So now that I'm on the outside looking in, like, I have, like, and again, that manager was like, you know, I know you and Dana have problems. I'm like, I don't know where that narrative keeps coming from. I love that dude. I have no issues with Dana.
This is the thing I'm talking about being misunderstood. Like, I can personally relate to so many situations.
Yeah, but it's like, but that's how the news goes. Like, you're talking about 4 years ago? He sold his company. He's worth $400 million fucking dollars.
Yeah,
I'm doing fine. Like, what animosity? Like, we're both good, man.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need anything from him. He doesn't need anything from me. I have no animosity towards him in any facet. If he called me and was like, hey, Brendan, we need you to do this to promote the show next week. Yeah, you got it. Whatever he wants, man. Yeah. I have zero animosity. I like the guy.
Yeah.
My show's built off his platform.
Yeah.
I have zero. So it's like this, you know, like you're talking about shit from 4 years ago. Like, what are we doing?
I love Dana White, man.
Yeah, I have no issue with
him. So I'm wondering, like, where along the lines were you like, I want to do comedy? Because, like, obviously, like, were you a funny kid growing up your whole life? Yeah. Because I'm not ever ready to, I don't think I'm a comedian, but I remember growing up kind of like the class clown, the kid who would make people laugh, and I'd find enjoyment in that.
Yep.
Did you grow up like that?
Yeah, I was the funny guy in the locker room, and then to me also, I'm surrounded by the funniest people in the world. So I moved to LA, while I was fighting the UFC, I started doing a podcast with Brian Callen, who's a stand-up comedian.
Right.
Comedic actor.
Yeah, how do you get into that circuit? Like, how did you get into the circuit with Brian and Joe?
Me and Brian. I was a coach on The Ultimate Fighter. They brought Brian in to make the kids laugh
on The Ultimate Fighter.
Yeah, I was a coach on there. Brian and I went to dinner that night, and me and him were just talking. I was talking about comedy. He's like, I didn't realize you knew so much about comedy. I'm like, yeah, I love it, dude. I'd love to try it and blah blah blah. And then he was like, well, you live in Denver, right? I'm like, I'm actually moving to LA next week. And I was just sold all my shit in Denver. I was going to drive to LA. And I was like, I'm actually moving to LA next. I'll be here Wednesday. And he was, man, let's grab coffee. And I remember driving to LA. I stayed at my uncle's house, and he lived in San Francisco. So I was at my uncle's house where I grew up as a kid, and it was just this empty house. And I thought I made a terrible choice. I was crying, and I had no friends.
At what age? What age was this?
To like 20, 27, maybe 26. Yeah. And then I remember I was like, oh, I got that comedian's number. I text him. I was like, hey, man, still down for a cup of coffee? I'm in LA. And he responded back like 3 seconds later. I was like, thirsty much?
So then I'm not gonna lie, he responded to me super quick.
Super quick. I was like, god damn, dude, show a little pride. Yo, play hard to get a little bit, dog.
I said, you gotta get you on my podcast. I was like, the bubbles was already there.
Yeah, he's like, and like say he was
waiting on my text.
He's all address.
I was like, yo, is this guy waiting for this shit?
He's all send nudes, y'all. Jesus Christ, dude. But so me and him went and got coffee, and he was like, oh, I do this like radio thing podcast in my garage. You should come on.
Is this when you first found out about podcasting?
I didn't know what it was.
Okay.
And no one, you know, it wasn't big. You're talking 10 years ago, dude.
No, it was literally beginning.
Yeah. So I go to his garage, do this thing. We had this weird chemistry. And he's like, dude, that's the best show I've ever done. We need to do this once a week. I'm like, I ain't getting with the ass once a week. And he's like, no, we'll do it and you'll break down fighting. And he just didn't know me at the time. I go, anybody knows me knows, like, especially when I was fighting, I don't want to talk about fighting, dude. That's all I fucking eat, sleep, and breathe.
Yeah.
And we talk about comedy and fashion and sneakers. And he's like, okay. And then we started Fighter and the Kid. And that was fucking damn near 10 years ago.
So you've been doing podcasting for 10 years.
Damn near, yeah.
Fuck.
One of the OGs before everyone and their fucking stepmom had a podcast.
Yeah, because I started podcasting 4 years ago. I would just, you know, I just told you about it. I wasn't able to be super consistent with it because of my circumstances and like the friend group changing and all that kind of shit. But by far, this is my favorite form.
How long have I been telling you? I mean, since like 2 days ago, I'm like, you need a podcast. And I never tell anybody that because we have enough podcasts in the world.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. So that's the thing everyone's making a podcast now.
Yeah, everyone. But you know, like the cream rises to the top, man. Like, so, you know, it's good because you can, you know, you cut out the middleman. So Hollywood's kind of dying in that aspect.
Yeah,
so
massively.
You don't need some big producer to go, yeah, that's a good idea. You should do this. Like, it's literally your direct, there's no middleman. You have a direct access to your fans.
Yeah.
There's no better way to do it. So my entire business is direct access to the fans. There's no middleman in anything I do, whether it's, you know, merch or the podcast or selling tickets to my comedy shows or even my special. It's not a network going, hey, make sure you watch Brendan. It's me telling you where to find it.
Yeah.
You're going to see how it was produced.
And there's so much power in that. And there's so much like...
It's everything.
The ownership. You know, ownership. It's like an artist having their masters or something like that.
But I like the pressure. Like, it's all on you.
Yeah.
I fucking love it.
So let's talk about that a little bit. Like, obviously the success. People who know you, who have been involved in your... You know, your ecosystem for years, they know how much you've done.
Yeah.
I don't even know if they know how much, but talk a little bit about, because I know you produce shows that you're not even on.
Mm-hmm.
And you have how many podcasts that you're actually on?
That I'm on and own. So there's Fight Companion. The Kid. There's Fight and the Kid, Fight Companion, it's Calabasas Fight Companion, Below the Belt, Food Truck Diaries, King the Sting.
And I'm curious, like, just so people listening, I think people have this perception of like, I've talked about this probably a few times on podcasts and just in general on the internet of like content creators or people like us, essentially, as almost like it's so easy because they see us sitting talking.
Oh, no.
So how many episodes do you film a week? Yeah.
So shit, man. Especially if there's a fight, let's say it's a Fight Companion, which I do once, twice a month, which you've been on twice.
Yes. It's amazing.
There's so much fun.
Amazing.
So every Monday I do Below the Belt at 8 a.m. I get done with that. Then I have Fire and the Kid. And then on Tuesdays I have King and the Sting. Every other week I do a food truck. So that'd be on Tuesday too. So that's four by the time I get to Tuesday.
Yeah.
Wednesdays Fire and the Kid. And then I kind of chill, or I'll be on tour. And then if there's a big fight, then I do a Fight Companion on Saturday. So you're looking at 5 to 6 shows, you know, so you're looking at, I don't know, man, was that 12 hours of work?
Yeah.
Just like talking work.
So without sounding cliche,
I still have to write for stand-up.
You know, I know.
So I still have to go on the road and develop an hour.
And also the back-end stuff, your business stuff, all the employees. Merch.
I just launched whiskey. Like it's.
What's the name of the whiskey?
It's called Tiger Thick. So it's about my son, and then also my brand is Thick. So what's interesting about that is, same with you, like everything you do, like, you know, like when you want to start, it's so funny. We'll talk about it. I wasn't going to get into it, but it's like merch or like podcast, whatever it is, like you'll have a vision and then it's like, yep. And then you have the team, the resource to get it done. Well, with alcohol, it's like fucking Yellowstone. It's like John Dutton on the ranch. Like, there's all these previous landowners, dude. And they've been there for hundreds of years.
Oh, yeah.
And for you to break land and get in there.
The buried entry is massive.
Dude, it's like the distribution. And like, in my head, I was like, oh, it's direct consumer. I'll make my whiskey. I'll make sure it's fucking
lit. I'll put it on Shopify and sell it.
And it's like, no, bitch. No, what? Yeah. No. So it's like, I didn't know this. And then yesterday I'm calling my team and we're going through it. And it was like, oh, we got work to do, dude, which I'm never afraid of. But I was like, oh, this is a different beast, which I love the challenge. And I literally just before this, that's why I had to push back to two. We're supposed to do at one because I was on the call with these distributors.
Yeah.
Who, you know, and it's like, dude, you're not going to like come out with a whiskey and that's available nationwide.
Yeah,
like,
no.
No, bitch, you're going to start in Texas, California, New York, and then we'll see how it goes.
You have to prove to them to continue to buy.
Yeah. Because it's so competitive, dude. Everyone and their brother has
you're going to have to show up to places.
Yeah, basically. I'm going to have to pitch it on them, which I have no problem doing.
Yeah.
But it's just like, you know, I'm a white belt in this black belt world of whiskey and liquor. And it's just like, hey, bitch, you're not George Clooney. Yeah. Like, you got some shit to do. You're not The Rock, bitch. Yeah, we're just not going to buy this. No. It'll humble you, man. Because you know what I'm saying? Like, you'll see, like, you know, Kendall Jenner, like, fucking George Clooney, where it, like, sells right away.
Yeah, of course.
You're like, bitch, you're not The Rock.
They're like, hold on, dog.
Yeah, you can fly out here.
You're tall, motherfucker. Yeah. But you ain't The Rock, bro.
Yeah, they're like, are you the UFC guy? You're like, oh, no.
Fuck.
Yeah.
I do some podcasts.
Yeah, I was like, oh, no.
No, but let's talk about success, because I think a lot of people are always, who watch these podcasts, I know are interested, obviously, in you as a person, which is why a lot of them are here. Mm-hmm. Me, probably as a person, which is why hopefully a lot of them are here. But what do you think is the most important, and this, like, again, I don't want this to sound cliche, but I think it's really important to ask these questions. What do you think is the most important thing in order to really find success in your
air
life?
Air conditioning. Do you not have it in
here? Yeah, we do. It's hot as fuck. Nah, the reason why I turn up, I ain't gonna lie to you, is because...
Is it too loud for this?
No, honestly, I'll tell you the truth. You know how messy that room is?
Yeah, dude. It's a fucking tornado went off.
So I kept that door shut. So it, just because aesthetically it was going to fuck me up on the side view.
That would have drove me nuts.
When I have the AC on, and that door shut, it goes like,
I feel you. No worries.
Bro, yo, open that up.
No, we'll power through it. It's all
good. No.
I promise.
I can tell you're getting hot. Oh,
my God. Yeah, long sleeve on.
All these fucking lights. Yeah, open up and turn. Go around the corner and turn the AC on. I'm sorry, guys. A little.
Oh, you're fine, dude.
Yeah. He's like, yo, I'm
what's
fucking
the thing to success?
Hot.
Fucking air conditioning.
No, that's definitely one of them. There's no doubt about it. AC is extremely important.
Dude, you're not happy, you're not doing success.
But I want to know, like, what do you think you can attribute in your life? Like, what like major points in your life are you like, oh, I see this? Because obviously that conversation you had with your father when you were 12 years old, he said, you see what I'm doing?
Yeah.
Is crazy. Like,
slight flex, but yeah.
Super flex, but also a good learning moment for
experience.
You. Like, what do you think you learned along the way? And what's the most important part for your success, at least?
Yeah, and I'll just be honest. I feel... A little awkward when people are like, oh, tell us about success, because I don't feel successful at all.
Okay, I relate to that.
Yeah. And I think because I'm surrounded by fucking Wolverines, dude. Like, you know, like my brother's Joe Rogan and fucking Tom Segura and Bert Kreischer and Chris D'Elia and all these monsters.
Yeah.
And I don't view them as competition. Andrew Schultz, right? And Theo. So, like, I'm surrounded by just these brilliant, brilliant men, and I feel so stupid around them. So I feel like it's awkward for me to talk about success, but then sure, I think, you know, I'm on my way, no doubt.
Yeah.
I think for me, and I will say this besides, and I don't think it's fair to say that because there's a lot of those guys work their ass off, but besides Joe Rogan, who's insane. No one has a better work ethic, though. It's not by a mistake.
Yeah.
Nobody has a crazy. I don't give a fuck whether you want to talk about the Mamba mentality, dude. He's that, but outside the basketball court.
Yeah,
on all aspects. So compared to him, I'm not shit. I'm the fat guy on the couch. But take Joe out of it, I'm the outlier. Where, it's like with comedy, I've been doing it 7 years now, but my work ethic in 7 years is probably similar to other comics doing it 14 years. Like, as far as my stage time and the work ethic and what goes into it and the writing, like, what they've done in 14, I've probably been able to accomplish in 7.
So you think it's strictly about work ethic?
100% work ethic.
Yeah.
100%.
What sort of, like...
With everything. Like, yeah, because I'm too embarrassed to fail. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, fuck. Dude.
Like, this whiskey, like, with those distributors, I was like, don't get me wrong. I know this is going to take work. I know it's going to be a beast, but I promise you I'll find my way in there.
Yeah.
Whether you guys say no, that's all good. Say no. See what happens, man.
Where do you think you developed that relationship with failure? The being afraid. Because I totally
I think sports and then like feeling embarrassed and like, you know, like as a kid, you know, I have kids now. I think the number one thing, you just want them to be quote unquote losers. Like you don't want them to like waste their lives. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Have you ever at any moment in your life felt like you were wasting time or wasting your life? Because listen, as successful as people might seem or whatever, obviously I feel like I have so much more to go. But like there's been moments where I'm like, fuck, man, what am I doing? Even though I was actively doing things that I thought were really important and necessary for my own success, there's still moments where I've just had like, I don't know if it's my own anxiety or just my own like, you know, criticalness on myself. But have you ever felt like, fuck, what am I doing?
No, not really. I know I'm on the right path. I know like it's just going to take time. Like patience is key. And I feel like I'll get there. It might take me longer in certain aspects, but I'll get there. You know what I'm saying? Like yeah. I'm not afraid to work.
Yeah, of course. So the comedy thing, like I've always been curious about this because obviously I'm not a fucking comedian. I don't really know enough. I know enough comedians, but do you spend like how many hours a day are you working on comedy, do you think? Like, because you have to write, because like if you do a stand-up, I've always been curious about this because I know some guys who I think are really funny and they could be great. I think they would be great stand-ups, but obviously like
it's different. Yeah,
yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't understand that aspect.
You know how like, your friend's like really athletic, you're like, dude, I'm picking him first when we play basketball and he's fucking terrible. That's how like it's like, and everyone thinks they're funny, everybody.
This is,
but there's a difference between professional funny, like entertaining a crowd like in Philly who doesn't want to be entertained and they're drunk and they're rowdy, converting them to having a good time, and then at the barbecue with your family and friends and you're the funny guy. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, so that's what I'm saying. That's completely different.
Different animal.
But going into the crowd in Philly who's like, they're drunk and they're like, make me laugh, motherfucker.
Which I love.
It's like, so what do you do to develop that? Like,
I think reps, and then also I think what has really helped me out as a comic.
Practice. You're saying practice.
Practice. Reps. Like just getting up. Like, and then for me, I was thrown to the fucking sharks right away because a lot of my like stage time was at the Comedy Store. So you're talking about the mecca of comedy.
Yeah. How did you get there so fast? Because of your relationships?
That, and then also the way I got into comedy is Brian Callen, myself, and Brian was a successful comic. Before me, selling 7 tickets, whatever. But me and him would do live
podcasts. He's selling what?
7 tickets. I was giving shit. He wasn't selling tickets until I came along. Anyway, so me and him start. I got on stage first by me and him doing live Firing the Kids. But they weren't live podcasts. They were live comedy performances. And we'd start every one with me telling a story for 10 minutes, which was basically my open mics, me doing stand-up for 10 minutes. But I didn't realize at the time.
Oh, shit.
And then me and him, it got to a level where we're doing Chicago Theater, Vic Theater, which is like 4,000 people. And we're like, whatever, like 10, 15 shows deep at this point on tour. And I turn around and I go, hey, dude, what should I do for my story tonight? I'm trying to think of a story. He goes, you're talking about your stand-up? And I was like, no, I'm talking about like when I go out and tell the story. He's like, oh, Bubba, I just didn't want to scare you. You're doing stand-up. I was like, you son of a bitch. That's when it flipped. I'm like, holy fuck, I can do this.
This is almost like the guy when you're like, because my buddy the other day, one of the athletes for Raw Gear, we had 6 plates on the bar, 6 plates and something. And I was like, yeah, that's 500 pounds. It was not 500 pounds.
Yeah.
But in his mind, he was like, oh, yeah, I could do that. I've done like this in the past.
Yeah.
And then I was like, yeah, just do it. Just pull it. Put a belt on and pull it. He didn't warm up at all. And he did it. And then we were like, yo, that was like 600 pounds.
He's like, what the fuck?
He was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
It's the same concept. Same That's thing. How you got pushed into it.
That's how I got pushed into it. And then we did a live Firing the Kid at the Comedy Store. And it went great. And I had a good set. And the crowd loved it. And then
when you knew it was comedy, though, did it make it more nerve-wracking?
Fired me up. Because I was like, yes, here we go. And I called my mom. Because like, hey, mama. And because she's always wanted me to do it. So then I was at the Comedy Store and we did a live one though. It went great. Then 2 weeks goes by and the booker for the Comedy Store, Emily, goes, she called me and she goes, hey, this is Emily from the Comedy Store. She goes, are you interested in, we have a spot open in the belly room, which is a small room. She goes, we have set in the belly room. You just got to do 4 minutes. And I'm so stupid and naive. I didn't know how it works. I go, oh, let me call Brian, see if he's available. And she goes, no, dumbass. Just you.
Yeah, you.
We saw you on stage the other night. Just you. I'm like, oh, shit. Here we go.
So what was that
like? That was my first set.
Were you nervous?
Super nervous because I'm such a comedy nerd and I know like the legacy there. And like I knew like I'd get some pushback, like getting to the Comedy Store that fast, stuff like that. But that's never bothered me. But it went well. But it didn't go great, but it went good enough where it didn't like scare me away from it. Yeah. So I was like, oh, I can, if I work on this, I can do it. And so then I'd go home and I'd do my set in the mirror a million times. Then I'd get up at the Laugh Factory in the Comedy Store. And then remember when I'm a year or 2 years in comedy, I'm getting pushed in there and I have to follow Joey Diaz and Mark Maron and Joe Rogan and Burt Kreischer and Tom Segura. The best, but the best of the best.
Fuck.
The best of the best.
What's your relationship like with Joe? I know he kind of like,
he's like a mentor, like older brother. Like I talk to him damn near every day.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I remember you were gonna get the spot down the street from the landlord.
Yeah, I was gonna take over his studio space,
and that shit fell out.
Yeah, just because like, you know, Joe's such a powerhouse, and like I love being associated with him. He's done so much for my career, but you don't want to be, you know, that tied to somebody, no matter who it is.
Right, right.
So as much as I want to take over spot and like, you know, carry on his legacy stuff like that, I need to do my own thing, which is why. You know, my favorite show ever to do out of anything I've ever done in my life, no matter what it was, is The Fight Companions.
Fucking amazing.
And so it was always, the original crew was Joe Rogan, Eddie Bravo, Brian Callen, myself. And it was like this special mix. And we're all so close and we had so much fun and people loved it.
Yeah.
And when he moved to Austin, I called him. I was like, dude, I know we're in lockdown and you moved to Austin. Like, we got to start these fight campaigns again, dude. Like,
this is important because I know how it's funny. Like, I don't know if I can put you on. I'm going to put you on blast. Fuck it. When we do the podcast, you're like, yo, don't read all these comments because there's a lot of negative shit. Mm-hmm. The number one thing was people are like, oh, he's doing it because Joe Rogan did it. Joe Rogan's not doing it anymore. It's not the same. But I don't think people understand the perspective that he actually, didn't he tell you like, yo, you should do this?
Yeah.
People don't know that though. Just so you know, people don't know that.
Oh, I don't care.
Of course you don't care.
But I feel you. Like,
I just want to let the audience know.
It's, by me doing that is paying homage to him.
Right.
It's his idea. I didn't start that. Joe's brilliant. It was the funnest time I ever had. The days of Joe, Eddie, Brian, and me together are no longer, man.
Right.
Just and it breaks can't go back. My fucking heart. It's the one thing, if I talk about it enough, I'll fucking cry. Yeah. It breaks my heart. So for me, I have the resources now. I'm at a level now where I can do that.
Is that relationship, not the relationship, but did that trifecta that you guys, did it stop because of the distance?
The distance, people got busy, COVID, people moved.
Yeah.
Just the landscape moved. The entire, like, we were the comedy rat pack of the Comedy Store.
Yeah, I remember it.
And then when the lockdown happened, everyone went their own way. It broke my heart, man.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, let's all stay to, wait, where's everybody going?
Yeah.
Like, we'll still do. And they're like, nah, bitch, we're out of here.
Yeah.
So then it was just like, I was so hurt, man. I was so hurt. And that's my own personal shit. And so I got to level where I'm like, oh, I can do these fight campaigns myself. And I called Joe, got his blessing. He's like, run with it, dude.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm going to call it Calabasas Fight Companion.
Yeah.
And I'm going to get my boys. So now, you know, if Brian in there, who, you know, was on the original.
Amazing.
And you have Chris D'Elia, who knows nothing about fighting, but he's the most talented and funniest person in the fucking world. You know, we've had you on there.
Yeah.
So it's like, I have people that I want to talk to. Like, my friends are on there.
Right.
And that's why I do it.
Yeah,
it's, dude, my favorite thing to do.
It's the most fun.
It's so fun. It we just bullshit. So,
sit there, drink, have
bullshit.
Fun.
Bullshit.
It's like, dude, it's crazy because it reminds me of like if I just had like my boys over straight up at my house watching the fight, there's just some cameras there. That's how it feels.
And that's how it should feel. Like you want people to be like, oh, I'm tuning in to watch the fights with Brendan, but I'm at home. Like I don't know him, but you're going to feel like you're part of the crew.
Yeah.
And you'll see now, and this is, again, I'm not taking credit for this. This is all Joe Rogan's idea. You'll see now, like, Monday Night Football does it, right? With the Peyton Manning podcast.
Yes, bro.
And you see the UFC does it now, too.
Yeah.
They're doing Fight Pass. And you see, you know, the Joe's NBA.
Fucking.
The Bill Simmons does it now with NBA. Yeah. And, like, all these people are doing it. But never forget who had the original idea, who started it, was the brilliance of Joe Rogan.
Yeah. And you were on that.
Oh, yeah.
It's crazy. I just think it's so dope, man, how, like, just social media in general and how, like, obviously podcasting, it's like, shaping broadcast and it's shaping like conversations. It's shaping so much shit that it was never like this. And it's also giving so much power back to individuals such as yourself, such as myself, people
which
who
is
do
huge.
So
because before, like if you wanted to get your foot in Hollywood, Hollywood's a fucking beast, man. So even like my boy Andrew Schultz just did a movie with Eddie Murphy for Netflix. And Schultz, like if you guys know who Andrew Schultz is, you're talking about Like, he's one of the greatest living comics alive. He's a hustler.
I just hit him up on DMs the other day to come do the show.
Why won't you just text me? Like, dude.
I forgot.
Put me and Schultz on a
group
text.
He is so fucking funny.
He's
dude.
My guy. So.
Ah, shit. Okay.
Yeah. So this is what kind of guy Schultz is. So I was shooting my 30-minute special. And he goes, I need to see it before you fucking shoot the special and make sure it's good. And he came out to L.A., sat in on my show, and was like, all right, you're good to go.
Whoa.
That's what type of guy Andrew Schultz is.
So wait. He came to be like, yo, let me like help you verify this.
Yeah.
Damn,
he's like, I ain't gonna
let
you just put something out. No, that's my guy. Yeah, that's my guy.
That's solid.
But as far as like comics go, you know, and ticket sales and like, there's nobody bigger than Joe Rogan. I'm sorry, bigger than Schultz besides like Rogan or Kevin Hart, something like that. But as far as like our group, he sells the most tickets. His podcast is the biggest number. Yeah, he's huge. He's enormous. He sold out Radio City Hall in New York like twice over.
I love his type of
comedy. He does huge theaters. You should go to a show. Nobody puts on a better show. As far as production value, like, dude.
I just like how he doesn't give a fuck.
He's
like,
a savage.
That is the best.
But so he's huge, dude. Like, amongst, like, my peers, he's huge. He's on a movie set with Eddie Murphy and all these big Hollywood actors.
Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't even know that.
Yeah, he's on a movie set.
I was like, this guy's fucking funny, man.
No, he's a beast. So he's on that movie set, and he was talking about on Flagrant 2, his podcast. He's like, dude, they don't know who the fuck. Like, they have no idea who I am.
So I got a question.
There's just, like, this weird disconnect with Hollywood. And, you know, like... The last one to know that their empire's crumbling is the king. That's Hollywood. Like, for them to know who Schultzy is, and, like, hate to tell you, but, like, besides Eddie Murphy, he makes the most money on that fucking set.
Yeah.
Besides Eddie Murphy, I don't know who else is on there, but I'd be willing to bet Schultz makes the most money. And if you walk the streets, more people know who he is than the rest of them besides Eddie Murphy.
Right.
But in Hollywood, like, who the fuck's this? What's he? Some young comic?
Well, it seems it's like so they, funny. It's like they want to hold on. They think they still have all the power, I think. And I think, like, you're going to hold on to that for as long as you can, right? But it's like, at some point, you don't have it anymore.
Dude, even with my agents, I sold this show to this network, and they're like, all right, well, here's the time commitment. It's Monday through Friday, and you're shooting this. I go, whoa. I can't commit to that. I got my shows that I own. And just so you know, doing that show that I get prepared for 4 days a week and then shoot on Fridays, I'm losing this much money a week. They went, what? I'm like, yeah, dude. I'm going to lose money by doing that TV show.
Yeah.
And they're like, no.
I remember we talked about this.
Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, dude. I can't do it. Like, you're turning it down. I'm like, I can't do it. It makes no sense.
It's like they don't.
They have no clue.
They don't realize it's there. They don't realize that the money that the actual, like, the power is there.
And then it sounds like you're flexing on, but it's literally like just showing, like,
it's opportunity cost. I mean, you can't.
But it's also like, hey, you know, I make, how much are you going to pay me to do that show once a week? I make that off merch in a day.
Yeah.
Like, do you realize this?
Yeah.
And I don't have to sit through, you know, and go through all these rewrites and the casting and all that. Like, I can just post a shirt.
I have a question. Do you think that, you know, because the whole world now is this cancel culture, all this cancel culture type shit.
Kind of.
Because, yeah, no, this is what I want to get into. Hollywood, though, they I feel like they live and die by cancel culture. But
it started with them.
But, yeah, okay. So, but this form of, which, like, Andrew Schultz, for example, like, this guy, the kind of shit he says is still so fucking, like, you just can't even, like.
Not to his audience, though.
That's what I'm saying. That's what
which
I'm trying to.
Which is all that he gravitates towards.
So, like, that's the crazy part of it, is that it's almost like, because of the cancel culture that came from the mainstream, it's almost pushed the power to the people who are actually creating the content.
Yes.
But do you think, like, someone like that would ever could get canceled? Like, what could cancel someone that is, like, obviously outwardly being, like, talking about all the things that people are afraid of talking about?
I don't think, no words would do it. Like, you know, no words would do it. You look at, like, Shane Gillis. Do you know who Shane Gillis is?
No.
Monster comic out of New York, born in Philly. He just released his special himself on YouTube. It's over 2 million views. He's a monster. He's such a creative. He got started on set. He got accepted Saturday Night Live. They hired him on Saturday Night Live. Before he even started, Hollywood went into all his old videos and tweets and found a video of him saying something, you know, not great about Asians. And they fired him before he even started. Well, what happens is, in our culture, like the comedy, like, culture and the fan base and the podcast fan base goes, holy shit, you guys fucked up. And they've rallied around him now. And now his career is bigger than ever.
So that's what I'm saying. Like, and
so it would take, like, now I think cancel culture, like, it's slowly kind of fading away because people are sick of it. And they realize, like, people make mistakes. This isn't the way you treat people. You don't kick people off the island for making one mistake. And we're realizing no one's going to learn from that. You're actually going to. So if they're racist and they're not anymore, but you cancel them because they said something when they were 16.
Right.
That person is probably going to get more racist. You know what I'm saying? Like, it doesn't make sense. You're not making that a better person.
Well, it's
also,
it's assuming automatically that people just can't learn or can't grow. Correct. Or can't become better, which is fucking crazy.
It's not a way to run any sort of business.
You can think about the
person,
if you're listening to this right now, like, who were you 10 years ago? Are you the same person today?
It's insane.
You weren't.
It's insane. So, you know, I think for a comic or act or anything, you'd have to do something pretty major to get canceled these days. But as far, you know, you're talking about like rape or something like that.
Okay, now, yeah.
That's different. But as far as words go, like, if you're still in Hollywood, you're going to get canceled if you're with words. But
did you hear about the football guy who, like, beat up his fucking girl recently?
Yeah,
like, yesterday?
I saw the video. I would love to beat the fuck out of
that guy. Yes, that guy is a fucking piece of
shit. Like, I'm not down to do any celebrity boxing matches, but I'd beat the shit out of him for free. Don't need payment.
You saw
nothing.
That shit? He threw her into
it's
the TV
insane.
And then threw her on top of
you,
the kid.
You know
thing?
How fucked up I am? Because I've seen some bad shit in my life. In my head, I'm like, God, she's tough, man. That bitch is tough.
Yeah, she
like,
got
she's
rocked.
Still, like, talking.
She stood up. She's like, can you stop?
She's like, would you just stop? I would be like, ah. She was like, what are you doing? Like, she was, like,
still in
calm,
shock.
Cool, collected. It's in front of the kid. You know what I'm saying?
Bro.
That guy needs his ass whooped.
Yeah. That's a fucking
cancel
fact.
That guy.
That's what
that's
I'm saying.
That's a bad guy.
That's the kind of shit you can cancel people
that's
for.
A bad guy.
But it's like, fuck, dude. That shit really fucking irked me.
That's
I
a bad
watched
guy.
That video. If you watched that video
got me. Yeah.
On with sound, I was like, whoa,
horrible.
This guy's a scumbag.
Horrible piece of shit.
Fucking crazy, man. Yeah. So, cancel culture and comedy. Do you think that, like, I just feel like it doesn't have a place, though, in comedy, right? You know, we talk about Dave Chappelle. Everyone's talking about Dave Chappelle, this community thing.
No, we say everyone. Here's the thing. We're in L.A. Everyone's not talking about it. So I'm on the road in Texas and in Idaho and Florida and Chicago. They're not, like, if you bring it up to them, like, wait, what happened? I thought his special was great. It's like, oh, in L.A., they're trying to cancel.
But me. On the internet, too.
The internet's not real. That's not real life.
That's true. It's
fact. You walk down the street, 1 in 10 people on Twitter. It's not real life.
Yeah, it's true.
It's not real life.
It's crazy, though.
But so it's like, he's not canceled. You know, he got $40 million for that special.
Yeah, well, I also know, like, he responded and was like, well, this is what being canceled is.
He's like, sign me up.
Love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you can't cancel a comic.
But that's what I'm saying.
Especially them trying to cancel him over, like, what he was saying doesn't entice violence or anything like that. Like,
You watched it, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, one of the greatest specials I've ever seen.
It was amazing.
Yeah, amazing. But I think, you know, his message was like, you know, he had a relationship with a trans person.
Yes.
That trans person committed suicide.
Yep.
He did a lot of great things for that person.
Yeah.
He's not homophobic or transphobic. No. Doesn't make sense.
He even claimed to be a feminist.
That's why that cancel culture doesn't have an argument.
Right.
Like, you're fighting against a guy who actually helped
your movement. This is a bigger thing. And I talked about this when I was on the Full Send podcast because they asked my opinion on this, you know, a couple weeks ago.
Are those boys scared of it?
No. No. I mean, that's the thing is, like, you can't. If you base everything you do off of what you think the reaction is going to be, then you're just never going to do anything.
Never.
And it's like in Dave Chappelle's situation, in comedy in general, it's like, are we just saying people can't talk about fucking things or joke? People have been joking about things forever. And then also the fact that what I said on the podcast, I just want to reiterate again here, is like, if we're saying that, yo, you can't talk about me, you can't joke about me, doesn't that just make that thing more taboo? And the whole point is their goal, right? They want it to be more inclusive.
100%.
So it's a very weird combination of things where it's like, okay, we're saying you can't say this, but we also want everyone to know about this, but don't talk about this.
As Schultz would say, everybody can get these jokes. Everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody.
It's,
you know,
amazing,
what I'm saying? Like,
man.
Once that trickulates into the comedy life and stuff like that and the culture, that's when cancel culture's gotten out of hand. Like, you can't put a muzzle on comics.
No,
it's not going to happen.
It's like I said, I think it's been a
it's
thing
never
forever where comedy is like, that should be the very last place that you should be able to talk about something that is taboo, that is scaring people, that is whatever.
And here's my thing with that is, if you don't like what Dave Chappelle's saying, don't watch his special.
Yeah.
It's not like fucking Channel 9's blasted out on mainstream.
But
you have to pay for a Netflix subscription. Click on his name, Dave Chappelle, knowing what he's talking about, and then watch it, you idiots.
But like,
I would imagine most of them haven't even watched it.
Right. They just probably saw what someone else said about
it.
Which is so crazy nowadays, though. Like, with social media, with the internet, it is the most common thing for someone to just see what someone else says about a situation, and they go, if it's like their friend or their brother, or their
they base their opinions off.
Oh, that's true.
They just regurgitate what that person
said. Bro, it is fucking insane. I mean, there's a whole conversation we could have about this, about a lot of other things that have happened in the world, but like, I don't want to get into that kind of shit. But yeah, man, like, do you ever have any moments in the content that you make, or the comedy stand-ups, the specials that you do, where you feel like, oh, I can't talk about this?
Never.
Yeah.
Because that, I know I'm a good person. I know it's come from a good place. Like the special I'm putting out soon, like I go hard on my Mexican family, man. And like my wife and mother-in-law were in the crowd. And if they're okay with it, and they're Mexican as fuck.
Yeah.
So these other Latinas, you're going to be upset? Even though my wife and I have Mexican kids and my mother-in-law.
And you love them. Of course.
Favorite people on the planet.
Right.
And they're okay with it, but you're not? Get the fuck out of here.
Well, it just reminds me, like, I remember when I was like 16 and you're in high school and you joke with your boys. And no matter what you said, it was always good.
It's always okay. It should it's like, be a safe space.
What's happening now in the world where it's like, yo, it's just, we got to attack everyone for everything.
You know what it is? It's like this culture, like, let's say we put out this podcast and someone goes, man, I loved it. Bradley and Shab were great. I might get 7 likes. And then if someone puts, I fucking hate it. And then they do something, that's going to get a lot more attention. So, and the media is guilty of this too. Like negativity is what gets clicks. That clickbait, like negativity is what we gravitate to, towards, unfortunately.
Bro, this is a whole conversation.
It's super toxic.
And I know it specifically because like I've been on YouTube for so long. Like I'm obviously I've been doing podcasting for 4 years on and off, but living on YouTube has taught me and living on social media has taught me like directly that fear, crazy things, like outrageous things or really super funny things are the things that get the most views or clicks. 100%. Like when you make someone think like, what's going on? I have to find out, right?
You get more clicks.
So a lot of times it comes through something that's negative or something that is like, could just be like, whoa, I gotta know. So it's like, I've watched, dude, the fucking transition of like mainstream media onto social media.
The key there, start with mainstream. Like just look at, for example, the Joe Rogan stuff with his vaccines and then like the horse dewormer and stuff like that. Like, dude, he was literally going to sue CNN because they were spreading this false narrative that he was taking this horse dewormer.
Yeah.
And even people to this, my own fucking family is like, can't believe your buddy Joe would take horse dewormer. I'm like, holy shit. You have
crazy.
You have
my mom, bro.
Yeah. It's like, mom, what world are you living in? Yeah. My dad was like, I can't believe he would. I'm like, holy shit.
Yes.
How much CNN do you watch?
And it's crazy because like, it's like literally that thing specifically has won a Nobel Prize for like helping fucking what billions of people, people.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, yo, we're just going to attack it. Cause like, that's our prerogative.
But they're not doing anymore.
Well, because you call this shit, which is crazy.
You fucked with the wrong bull.
Now you start talking about power and like, this is what I'm saying. We're talking about Hollywood mainstream versus like, where do you think this is going? Like, I honestly believe, I think we had this conversation a long time ago in person. There's like, at what point there's going to be this shift where like, there's almost so many, not celebrities, but social media influencers that have so much of their own like audience or fan base or people that's watching that people almost like stop actually really except for like a certain because that's the thing, like a certain demographic eventually once they
pass away
the new people coming up are living like with this technology, right?
I mean look at the ratings. Like I mean you look at even one of my shows and especially Joe Rogan's show, like compared to CNN, you know how many more millions and millions of, it's not even close.
No, it's
so
not
if CNN goes Joe Rogan's taking a dewormer, cool, let's say I think they get like 200,000-300,000 people a night. All right, shit numbers.
Yeah.
Rogan gets on there. You're talking a bachelor of his gets 11 million views.
Yeah. Do you think CNN's mad that that doctor got on and was like
and got annihilated?
Yeah. Do you think they're like, fuck, why'd you do
yeah,
that?
Yeah, they're like, why would you do that? But they even tried spinning that. He even tried spinning that.
I know.
He's like, I had to go in the lion's den. And it's like, dude, and you got eaten alive, bro.
Bro, it's just crazy.
Which is great to see.
I love it. I just think it's getting to this point. It's going to get to a point where it's like, mainstream media is not going to be what it is unless someone.
Well, they've already lost the trust. Like they've already lost the trust of the public. You look at like what they've been doing with the vaccines and COVID, and like Fauci and stuff. Like the government and the mainstream media is already like, who watches that and believes it? Also, who watches it?
My
so,
mom,
my dad.
Fuck.
But it's so negative.
It's no. I want to tell you a story.
It's so negative. Like you want to slit your wrist if you watch fucking KTLA every morning. Sure,
bro, this was in Miami. I was in Miami. It was me and Steve. We were going to the gym. Okay. Sorry. Me and Jacob, my videographer, because I'm going to the gym. I'm going to meet Steve at the gym. So we're listening. This guy's listening to NPR, okay? And it's talking about like wildfires, rainforest, like all this like negative, everything possible. And I'm not saying these things aren't happening and people shouldn't be like thinking about these things. But it went from like that to like, I don't know, some trial thing about, I don't know if this was
Rittenhouse or something.
Something like, yeah. I don't know if it was Rittenhouse. This was a while ago. And then it was like, which so I'm going to ask you about that in a second because it just got.
Yeah.
Anyway,
you got off ultra.
And then it started talking about COVID. Right. So I'm going to the gym and I'm sitting in the backseat. Jacob's right next to me the driver, and I kind of said to myself, I'm like, fuck, man, I don't know how you can listen to this negative shit. It's like, it was not, it's just like negative, negative, negative. Like, be scared, be afraid, be afraid, be afraid. I'm like, fuck. And I put my headphones in. I was like, I can't listen to this shit. Anyways, I look into the thing and I notice he starts talking to Jacob. So I take my earphones back out and he goes, I get the tail end of like, have you guys been tested? Yeah, and we're like, yeah, we tested recently. He's like, yeah, well, he's like, he goes, I have the Delta variant.
Okay.
And he was like, you know, he's like, you know, it can kill you.
There you go.
I was like, yo, pull over this car right now. He's like, we're almost there. I was like, pull over this car.
Yeah.
I got a little upset. I'm not gonna lie. I said, pull over the fucking car.
Yeah.
And I got out and I was like, yo, like what is the use in that? Why would you be that kind of person? It's like, it's just creating this weird fucking dynamic in the world. My thing is,
I don't have any animosity towards him because remember, he grew up with that. He didn't grow up with like we did. You know what I'm saying? Like he grew up with that, like, you know, fucking Walter Cronkite or where the fuck he's grown up, Barbara Walters and like what they say is word. So for him, that's all he knows. Same with my dad. Like, my dad didn't leave his house for like 16 months.
Yeah.
And like, my brother lives pretty close to him. He's like, dad would answer the door in a full, like, fucking, you know,
it's just nuclear
war outfit and like gloves and shit and wouldn't talk to me. And like,
yeah.
I don't hold it against him because that's all they know.
But do you think, though, you know, obviously that there's a generation that like they grew up and like plugged into that, right? And that's all they know. But there's still a new generation that like, it's not getting to them. I'm not saying like what everything is said is wrong or incorrect, but there's still a new generation that is adopting that mentality of like,
for sure.
Like,
but a lot of people, like if you think about it, like a lot of people aren't risk takers. I'm not saying you're a risk taker if you're not wearing a mask, you're not getting vaccinated, but you're probably a little more of a, it's in your DNA. Like you're a bit more of a risk taker. Like you're probably entrepreneur. You're probably more likely to, you know, bet on yourself and, you know, do some crazy shit and, you know, climb fucking Mount Everest, stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
There's different types of people.
Where do you think this shit's going though? Like I'm a little bit, we talk about it a little bit at the gym sometimes here and there. I'm like, I'm afraid.
With California?
Yeah, California in general, man. I'm like, fuck, am I? I grew up my whole life. I grew up in San Francisco. I live in Sacramento State. I came down to Orange County, lived all in Orange County, all through Orange County, all through LA, lived in Woodland Hills now. And I'm like, I never ever until COVID, the end of COVID, like I say, like 8 months in, 9 months in, I was like, fuck, I really don't want to live here anymore.
But this is my thing with that. And at the gym, I wanted to sell my house right away when we left there talking to that cop. But it'd be weird to leave now. Like you should have left.
Yeah, fuck.
Like it's open now.
God,
like,
I know.
It's not terrible here. But it's not going to get worse. Like this is the worst. Like they can't do anything else worse to us. We'll never be locked down again. They realize they don't want to admit it. They realize that shit did not work. Okay, they ruined small businesses. So we're not getting locked down again. You might have to put a mask on. Like, but I'm a homebody.
Yeah.
So like, me too. My gym is Zoo Culture. You don't make me wear a mask.
Never.
I own my own studio. They don't have to have masks.
That's
in
pretty
there.
Lit.
So it's like, unless like I walk in a restaurant and I can take the mask off when I sit down, which is so hilarious. It's like, hold on. While I'm talking to you, trying to get a table, I have to have a mask on. If I go to the bathroom, I don't have to mask on it. If I just sit there, that's safe.
Bro.
Because COVID won't go that way.
So here's the deal, right? Like me and you, right? We have those circumstances because that's our life. But everyone else is like, they feel forced into it. Like I'll give you an example. A lot like what you were just saying. I went into a Cava, which is like a Mediterranean. I love this place. It's in fucking Topanga. You get like a bowl. You can pick what you want,
Sounds nice.
I go into Cava.
And tzatziki sauce and shit?
Tzatziki, all that good shit. Hummus, all that fire shit. Like spicy lamb meatballs and shit. It's incredible. Yeah. Anyways,
I'm in
Cava and there's no one in there. It's about to close. There's two people sitting there eating without the mask on eating. No one else in there except me. I go up. He goes, as soon as he sees me walk towards the back, he's like, hey, you got to put a mask on.
And you walked in the store without a mask.
Walked in the store without a mask. And I was like, hey, he says, hey, you got to put a mask on. I said, I don't have one. Could you provide one I can use? Yeah. And he's like, no. And I was like, okay, can I just order and get out of here real quick? Or can I tell you what I want? I'll wait outside. No. And the thing that got me was I said, okay, I said, so if I was sitting right here and I was drinking water, like, can I just get order water real quick? And then sit here. I know it's like a little fucked, a little facetious, whatever you want to call it. But I was like, if I sat right here, just like those people are sitting literally right there, zero mask on, right over there, no problem. right? If I sat right here on this table and I just said, hey, can you just, I just want the chicken and the rice. That's it. You don't even got to put any sides, anything else. And so now I'm having a conversation with this guy for like 5 minutes.
I'll throw you my American Express from here.
Yeah, no, yeah. Or like I'll just come by and hit the Apple Pay thing that I use because I never carry my wallet anyways.
Yeah.
So boom, I don't even got to touch the thing and I'm dipping. And the thing that fucked me up was, and this is what we talk about, me and you have a different circumstance, right? Because you could show up to my gym, you could do all your things, but everyone else is still have to be like,
I know.
They have to go into the process. And I asked this guy, it really was just startling to me because it couldn't make it make sense. And I said, does this make sense to you? And his response was, it doesn't matter. And I said, okay, I put my phone down just so he didn't think I was recording or anything. I was like, all right, dude, my phone's like right here. I'm not recording you. I understand you're doing this. This is your job. As a human, though, I've just got a genuine question for you before I leave. Does this make sense to you? Again, he goes, it doesn't matter what I think. That's what fucked me up, bro.
But yeah.
That fucked me up.
And I get it. It's frustrating. My thing with that guy, remember. So
I understand he needs that job.
He'll get shut down.
I totally get it.
So
but like,
so his thing is, my entire life savings is into this fucking Mediterranean restaurant that has fire lamb.
Well, no, he was just an employee. So he's just following his job. He doesn't want to get fired. I understand that. But I'm talking about in the overall perspective. It's like, are people just being taught that like, yo, it doesn't matter what I think. I'm just following this rule. And that's
what's business owner. That's what's disappointing, especially in California.
Bro, but it's crazy.
It doesn't matter.
But the crazy thing is it does. It's still up to a business owner. So the people who are enforcing, you have to have a vaccine or you have to do this, you have to show up with this. They're still enforcing that willingly.
Yeah, but unfortunately, that's our government here in Los Angeles, especially LA County.
No.
You outside LA County, it's not like this. But for those business owners, that's the mandates. Those are the rules. So unfortunately for them, especially that kid who works there, he's like, dude, I'm fucking trying to save up to buy a Ford Fiesta, man. I get it.
I totally understand his. He don't want to
fucking
lose his job.
I'm with you. I've been like, you know, I'm on the road all the time. I was in Texas. And in Florida, they've made it like illegal to have mandates, shit like that. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
And I went to this coffee shop, like a, you know, hipster coffee shop. And this girl goes, oh my God, it's me and my meathead friends, like Mark Harley and Chappelle. Like we're all thick as fuck.
Yeah.
She goes, oh my God, put a fucking mask on. I go, excuse me? She goes, put a mask. And I haven't touched a mask since I was in Texas. I go, no, I just want, we're in Texas. She goes, I don't give a fuck where you're at. Put a mask on. And she was so hostile. I'm like,
wow.
But you're in, where was I at? At fucking Austin. I'm like, San Antonio. I go, but this is, you know, you don't have to do this. She's like, I don't care. These are my rules. She must have been the owner.
That's what
she's
I'm
like,
saying.
Put a mask on. I just went, I'll go to another place. All good. Do your thing. Like, that's your right if you want.
Of course.
Yeah. But you're not getting my money.
Yeah, no, I do that. Like, oh, like there'll be places now that'll be like, you have to show this or show that. I'll be like, all right, whether or not I decide and whether or not you think it's a good idea to get vaccinated or not, do you. But this whole, like, the forcing of, yo, you can't police and you can't be here, you can't come here. Like you said, I'll walk straight. I'll be like, all right, cool.
Me
I'm just
too.
Not going
like,
to put my
I'll
business
go somewhere
here.
Else. Yeah. The thing is, like, we can be mad about it and try to fight it and stuff like that. But, like, it's not, you know what I'm saying? Like,
it's not going away.
I think it will. I think next year this all goes away.
You think they won't say, you got to show up with a vaccine passport and show me?
I think all
because I was going to go to a restaurant the other day on Ventura Boulevard. And they're like, I literally was like, okay, I know they're going to ask because I called and they're like, yeah, you have to verify that. And I pulled up and I was waiting outside. And I just wanted to see, like, some people were walking up. And they literally had someone show their thing and then show their ID. And I was like, holy fuck. That's crazy.
And again, it's like kind of that Hollywood thing. Like we're in LA, but you travel like I do. Like everywhere else is different. So that'd be a reason to move. But my thing is like, I'm not willing to give up California that easy. Because then Newsom wins. Like, bitch, that ain't, I'm a fighter, dog. You ain't
gonna
win me that
easy.
I
love it.
No,
I love California, man. I love it.
Our taxes suck. Our government sucks. Outside that, though, it's the best place on fucking earth. And I've been everywhere, dude.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
There's nowhere
fuck,
like this.
Man.
There's nowhere else you'd live? I feel like if I move, Newsom's like, yeah, bitch.
Gotcha, motherfucker.
Gotcha, bitch. Get out of here.
Go to Austin.
Yeah,
you
get
pussy.
Out of here, bitch.
Follow Joe.
Yes, I refuse to do that.
Fuck, man. But so, like, what would make you move? What do you think?
If they force my kid to get vaccine, like they were going to kick him out of school because he's in such a good school.
Yeah.
Or if they locked it, if like, let's say in December, because it's going to be flu season, which they'll blame COVID for and be like,
God
oh, it's COVID.
It. So we already know that's coming.
Yeah, for sure. And they're always like, making boosters required now or whatever.
No, they start hyping it up. They're
so
like,
insane.
Yo, December is coming.
Dude, so if they did like lock down again, I'd be like, all right, Newsom, you won, dude. I'm fucking out of here. Dude, that'd be it'd have to be something extreme.
There's no way they can do it again.
They're not going to, but I'm saying that's what, like, in my head, it'd have to be that extreme.
fucking crazy.
But I refuse to leave. I fucking love it here. I'm not going to let them win.
No, we can't, man. It's fucking like, yeah, crazy. No doubt.
Give us your fucking tax money.
It's fucking crazy. So you have a full blown family. You have kids.
Yep, 5 and 2 year old. Yep.
Do you ever have like, I don't know, like, do you ever have a hard time? Because this is a genuine question from me to you, because mm-hmm. I'm so fucking busy and I do like.
How old are you?
32.
Okay.
And I do want to have kids. I'm not saying I know exactly like this is the right time. How do you know when it's the right time? Because I'm so fucking busy.
There's
and I
never
know,
a right time.
Okay.
Trust me, when it does happen, you'll find time.
This was a selfish question I got to say on the podcast. Everyone listening, I asked them. It was personally just for me to.
Yeah, hear. No. It's
I normally
all good.
Ask questions because I think they want to know them. Yeah. And I like questions that
but
I
I'm sure
be
some people do too. Because like I don't think there's ever a right time. Like if you're gonna wait for the right time, you never have kids.
Yeah.
The difference with me is since I was a little kid, I've wanted kids. I want to be a dad.
I did too.
So it's like for me, like, you know, I'm a good podcaster. I'm a good comic, good businessman. I'm a great dad. I'm a beast of a dad. Yeah. I know that.
That's what I want to do the most,
I know
most,
that for
man.
A fact. Beast of a dad.
I want
Super
to do
dad.
The most.
Yeah, it's the best. Nothing Fuck. Better. And I've done some cool shit, man. I fought in fucking the UFC in fucking Toronto in front of 6,000 people. I yeah. fought in Vegas at MGM. You know, I've played in Big 12 championship football games. I've played in fucking big bowl games on ESPN. You know, I've done Wilbur Theater in Boston. I've shot 2 specials. Nothing. Nothing compares to being a dad. Yeah. On a daily basis. Not even close, dude.
Yeah,
it's the best job I've ever had.
I remember I had a conversation with a business partner of mine where I was like, how much I love my dogs. And he's like, yo, if you think like the love you have for your dog, like wait till you have a son. Wait till you have
wait,
a kid.
Wait for the anxiety you have about a kid.
About their like
just
trajectory.
Life.
Their life,
yeah, just
yeah.
like life. Not the trajectory. He's going to be fine. He's a monster. But as far as just like the world's scary.
Yeah,
like
that's
him going
also,
to school,
so that's a thing
like
too.
When we walk at a mall, like when we go to a public place, like I'm like fucking... Like I'm security for fucking, you know, Nicki Minaj.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah. Like, who the fuck's looking at? Yeah.
Oh, dude, everything.
Which is
I'm
crazy,
thinking of like
though.
Open shooters. Like we go to the movie theater. He's like, Dad, why are you sitting in the back? Because the exit's there, motherfucker.
Yeah.
Like a
Yo,
shooter comes
I swear
in,
to God,
yeah.
that's real.
Oh, dude, like my height, like, dude, I could fucking be security for Biden at this point. Like this, yeah. the anxiety yeah. I have around my kids, dog.
Which is that, but that's another thing I was like asking you is like, I worry about that just because the world is, it doesn't, it's just
it
getting
makes
a
you
weirder.
A better person though.
Yeah.
You'll be more disciplined like now because time is so valuable. Like I have to cut out. So when I get home after this, like my, thank God my week's done. I haven't had a day off in 18 days.
Yeah.
But so tomorrow I'll shut off my phone and it's like, even during the week. So like yesterday I had a full day, shot this big commercial. Got done at 5 p.m.
What commercial you shot? What the fuck?
For my special.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, I'll tell you about
it. I thought it was like some other random shit.
No, this you're going to love this. It's so dope. Yeah. But so when I get home, it's like, man, from when I get home, whether it's at 4 to when he goes to bed at like 8, nah, man, it's all them. Yeah. We're watching fucking Teen Titans and wrestling nonstop. And there's nothing better, dude. And like you think what you're doing is important, and when you get home, like your kid don't give a fuck, man.
Yeah,
he's
it's
like,
gotta be
what?
Kinda nice, though.
Like whenever I had like beef with anyone like that, and like I'll be in my head about, God, I bet everyone's thinking this. I get home, my son's like, what? Who gives yeah. a fuck, yeah. dude? Like, can we get the Legos, bro?
Damn.
Like, what's up with Angry Birds? I'm like, yeah, yeah. you're right, man.
Yeah,
you know,
fuck all
yeah,
that
it's
shit.
Great, dog.
Damn, dude, I do. I really want fucking kids, man. I want 2 sons. So
that's
bad,
what
man.
I have, two kiddos.
So bad. And that's why I was asking these questions.
It's crazy, man.
I want it so bad,
and it's
man.
So dope. It's so dope, dude.
Yeah.
There's nothing better. Like, Fuck. He woke me up this morning at 5 a.m. And I know it's cliche to say this. Like, I go to bed with butterflies.
Yeah. Because you're going to need to wake up and see them.
Mm-hmm.
That's beautiful, man. Mm-hmm. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
What do you want your kids to do? Do you have any idea what you want them to do?
Not fight.
Fair.
Wouldn't let him fight.
Well, real quick,
it's too
too
tough of a go.
What, I have a question about fighting. I know this is super left field based on a kid conversation, but what was the hardest fight you ever had in the UFC?
They were all fucking hard.
Anyone stand out where you're like, fuck, man, this is like annoying.
I would say the most heartbreaking one was the Nogueira fight because that was like my, I think my life trajectory would have changed if I would have won that fight.
Yeah.
And but not in a good way.
Yeah.
I think if I would have won that fight, I probably went on to fight like Brock Lesnar and fight for the title. And I would have been so consumed in fighting. That would have been my life. And that was tough because...
Dude.
It was tough because I flew... I just beat Mirko Krokop, knocked him out. It was like won the fight of the year. you know, knockout of the year, like crazy shit. Yeah. And we're all busted up. And then they give me Nogueira in Brazil. That's like fighting Michael Jordan in Chicago.
Yeah.
So nobody's rooting for me. I'm on the poster. It's me, Forrest Griffin, Big Nog, Anderson Silva. Like, it's like the first time they're back in Brazil. Yeah. The promotion was fucking crazy.
Yeah.
I was favored to knock him out. I'm on this insane press tour. Biggest, you know, how many millions and millions and millions of people watched that? And I went in there super cocky because I should have just destroyed this dude. And
Nogueira.
And he caught me with the right hand. And then, you know, I was in Brazil. I was like so embarrassed. My family flew out, you know, 14 hours on a plane to get to Brazil. Yeah. And I'm there for 7 days after because we thought I was going to destroy this dude and enjoy Brazil. And I just remember I'm like walking around Brazil, like black eye, like half my money. I'm broke. And I was like,
but this is
famous guy in the UFC, I guess. I'm broke and I'm walking around. I'm so embarrassed. And then like the Brazilian fans just like took all that away. They like gave me hugs and kisses and gave me free food. And like, they're like, you're such a warrior. And like, it just made me realize like, oh dude, this is dope.
But it's also like, it's a really big learning experience in your life. Like the crazy thing, this is my story. It's, I'm going to tell you guys is 100 times not as fucking alpha, not as cool. Because it was in the competition industry, which is like we stand on stage and we show off our abs and shit.
Still,
but I don't know,
discipline to get there, man.
For sure, but like fighting is obviously 10 times more alpha. But the crazy thing about what you said, just to give you guys perspective, I was doing the competition stuff and I wasn't like the popular guy.
Yeah.
And then I got second place at a show where I would have got my pro card if I got first. And then every show after that, they gave 2 pro cards for the first and second. And it was a big turning point where I was like, yo, fuck this industry and the way it was set up and the way I felt about how it was like political. And if you're on this person's team, you got a better look. And that, and then I found out later on that guy won because he was on this person's team. And anyways, the point is this,
political.
I was so beat down after that show. I remember this is back when people used Facebook. People would message me on Facebook and be like, yo, you got robbed. Crazy shit. And I remember being like, yo, fuck this. And it was such a like a negative point, but at the same time, like you were kind of saying, it changed the course of my life for the fucking better.
Yes, thank God he beat me.
So it's important for people listening, like you don't always get the things you think you really, really want, but you know the thing, the saying is you get what you need.
Yeah. Oh, I thought you were gonna get religious, be like, God has a plan for you.
I was gonna do that too.
Like, I don't know if he does.
No, we can talk about that all day too.
We can.
But I'm just saying, like, I feel like we could talk nonstop, to be honest,
it, dude.
Bro.
Yeah.
But it was, I realized I got what I needed. I just didn't know it at the time that that's what I needed. And it took so much time to realize that. Like,
yeah, I think there's that, but I also think you have the IQ and the business savvy to make anything work. Whether that worked out or not, you'd been okay. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like you would have made that work. It didn't work out. You bounce off that and go this direction. Like you're a guy who's going
to
make it work no matter what.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I have to.
It's in your DNA.
So okay,
I think that's why you have a gorilla on your hat.
Yeah. I know it's in yours too.
Yes.
Do you think you can learn that?
That's a good question, especially with kids. I don't know. So for instance, with my son, I know everyone talks about how cool their kid is, but listen to this shit. So he's been in training wheels for a while and you know, I have a bike club, right? I ride bikes every day. So he sees me go out every morning and ride my bike. And so he wants to be like that. So I got him a bike and has training wheels on it. And then last week he's all, Dad, I want training wheels. You don't ride with training wheels. I'm like, I know, Tiger, but I've been riding for a long time, but I started with training wheels. He's like, I don't want training wheels.
How old is he?
5.
Got it.
And I go, I'll take him off, dude, but your mom's going to kill me if I don't buy you like the bullshit, like, you know, elbow pads and the the neck brace and whatever the fuck it is.
He's like, fuck, you're riding shit. Like,
so I'm on Amazon, like looking for that. And I'm like, this shit's going to take forever to get here. So I go, fuck it, dude.
I love it. Yeah. Yo, I fucking love it.
Yeah. So his mom's in the house. I'm like, just me and I go down there. Don't say shit. I'm like, just be cool, man. He's like the loudest kid ever. So he's quiet. So we go down there and I'm like, all right, dude. And it's 5 o'clock, mind you. So it's kind of starting to get dark. And I'm like, I'm gonna hang on and just get comfortable with it. And I'm like, and in my head, I'm like, this is not the way to learn to ride a bike. So I'm like, I'm like holding him and he's going. And I feel like he kind of has it. And I let him go and he falls. And he doesn't get hurt. He pops up. He's like, again. So we're doing it. Boom, falls. He's like, again. Hour later, we're doing the same thing. But Bubba, it's getting late. It's fucking dark out. And he's like, I'm not going inside till I learn to ride the bike.
Also, no, I think it's in your
DNA.
So
like that, I call it that Mamba mentality. Dude, he was out there for 3 hours. and learn to ride that fucking bike.
Yeah.
Then the next morning. So my incentive, and it's kind of the way I was as a kid, I needed a goal. So I told him, I said, if you learn to ride the bike, like you can go around like 8 times without crashing, I'll buy you any bike you want. He was really, any bike you want. This little bastard.
He was like, that I'm night, getting that fucking dude, bike I want.
He was scratched up again. And we're out there for 3 hours. That little bastard did it. The next morning, we went 5 a.m., wakes me up, and we have a monitor.
I know
what
bike I want.
He goes, Daddy, I'm awake. Every morning he goes, Daddy, I'm awake. And I walk in his room, my underwear, and I jump in bed with him, and then we sit there and talk. And I jump in bed and goes, pull up your phone so we can order my bike.
I love it, man.
He's a little beast.
You know what's crazy? Whenever I hear stories about kids, like any, I swear to God, anytime I ask anyone like who have kids, they're always like 5 or 6 years old, which is so crazy. Because in my life, my father took his life when I was 6.
Can't imagine.
And it's weird. Every time I ask people how old their kids are, I swear to God, they're either five or six. Every single time.
Yeah.
That's so crazy to me. But I'm not making it about that. I think the thing that's interesting to me is like you built this. It's almost like this kind of shit is in your DNA a bit. It's in your genetics, like the need to, because your son has it like that. Yes. Whether or not like you teach him like, hey, these are the things you need to do if you want to get that, or like.
No, I didn't. Trust me, I wasn't like fucking. It's not like Schindler's List where I'm like, we're staying out here for the next 3 hours.
Yeah, he wanted that,
dude. I didn't want that. I wanted to go inside the house. I was fucking tired.
Yeah. But that's what's so interesting to me. Like that's what I'm saying. Crazy. Can you teach this kind of stuff?
That's a good question. I don't know. Yeah. And then, you know, he's in jiu-jitsu. So like some of the other kids, like he'll be like, Dad, why do I have to go when this kid's not there? I'm like, cause you're not that kid, dude. You're good at this and you started this. You're going to fucking finish it. Like that kid can do whatever he wants, but you committed to this. I'm paying for it. You're fucking going, dude. So then he doesn't even question anymore. Yeah. So he goes and he's really good at it. But you'll see even at that age, like you'll see some kids where it's like, probably shouldn't be in this, huh? I want to get that, but you know he shouldn't be here, right?
The
you
participation
know, like,
trophies?
Yeah, it's like, you know, like, come you know what's on. Happening. Yeah.
Like, stop.
Yeah. It's and so then even my kid, like, he knows. So, like, they'll partner him up and do takedowns. And my kid, you know, he's just a fucking beast with takedowns. He takes everybody down. So I have to put him with the older kids. So when they're pairing with someone his age, they're like, mm-mm. Like, he's like, mm-mm. The coach is like, so what funny. The fuck? And I'll be like, oh, man, this is not good. Yeah.
That's so fucking funny to me.
Yeah, I love it, man.
Do you think there's something like for the person listening who's like who wants to? I mean, obviously not in relationship to like a kid and being good at jiu-jitsu or anything like that, but trying to learn how to be more successful in their life. Is there any advice you'd give them? Like what? Like
I guess just don't stop. You know what I'm saying? Like I think
fully agree.
For me, like I'm never gonna stop. I don't pay attention to the chatter online. I don't pay attention to the chatter around the water cooler. I don't give a fuck. Because if I would have listened, think if you're listening to this right now and you want to do something.
I already know where this is going.
And you want to do something. And you go online right now and you go, hey, everybody, try this out. Go, hey, everybody, I want to start stand up. I want to start fighting. I want to start a podcast. I want to start bodybuilding. Go on the go. Should I do it? Watch how many people go, no.
Fuck no, you ain't worth it. The majority's going to be
no. Oh, yeah. But those people ain't shit because they've never taken the risk. And the reason they're saying no is because they feel some type of way because they never took those risks. So for me, I've never listened to that ever in my life. Even when I started stand-up, I had other comics go, dude, this can take 10 years before you even get an act. I went, it took you 10 years, dude. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'll figure it out. Like, I'll get the reps and I'll figure it out. So with anything, I don't really look for advice. I don't call Joe for advice. I don't call Brian I don't call anybody, man. I know what I want to do and whatever it takes, I'm willing to do.
Yeah.
But no matter how much time it takes. And when I say this, I genuinely mean this. I don't give a fuck about the chatter online or about people in restaurants. I don't care, man. I know what I want. Yeah. I'm not looking for you to know what I want.
That's what it takes. I mean, that's truly what it takes.
When you're going to start a dream, like, why would you ask that person about your dream?
No, bro. I get hit up this all the time, social media. Just for one example, people saying, I want to do what you're doing. How do you do it? How did you do it? That's the biggest thing. And another thing I always hear is, like, there's so many people doing it now. It's so saturated. It's like, yeah, there is. But, like, there is only one of you. And that's the thing that people like to look outward and they go, like, oh, well, that person has success because they did these 5 things. So I'm just going to follow these 5 things. Mm-mm. This is another derivative of, like, it just... Like, fuck what everyone else is doing. And also, fuck what everyone else is saying about what you want to do, because you're not going to get to where you want to go by listening to what everyone else is doing.
But those opinions and, like, haters and stuff, the reason they're so against whatever it is, a successful comic or podcast or actor, or rapper.
It's in here.
It's in here, man.
Yeah.
And I realized that a long time ago.
Yeah.
So I stopped giving any attention to it.
Yeah.
I'm like, God, there's a lot of mental health issues out there.
You got to think
about
it.
There's a lot of sour bitches. You know what I'm saying?
For someone to get on the internet and say like, fuck you, you ain't shit, you can't do this, is like, hold on a second. Wait 1 second. Where the fuck is that coming from? Like, I don't know anyone who's super successful that goes, fuck you, you can't do that shit.
Never.
Anyone would ask me anything, I'd be like, yo, try it. Like, you could pull it off.
And also, and it's just the way it works. Like, you'll realize you'll never see anybody doing well throwing hate. Ever, ever, ever.
Yeah.
I've never had a comic.
But there are some people.
Never had a comic more successful than me hate on me. Ever.
But there are some people who thrive off. I know at least on social media today, there are people who do thrive off of talking shit about other people to enforce their own brand. But to build themselves up.
There's going to be a ceiling there, though. They're never going to get to the final destination.
And
there's going to be a ceiling with that negativity that you're spewing out in the world. There's going to be a day where those followers you have are going to grow up, have kids, get real jobs, and be like, what the fuck am I listening to this dude for?
Yeah.
Like, life is negative already.
Yeah.
So there's a ceiling with that. And that's fine. They might get some attention, but my ceiling, because I'm a positive, loving person, is so much higher than yours, dude. Much higher, not even close.
Well, that's the thing too, just the people listening, like if there's something you really want to do in your life, if you did everything in your life based off what someone else said, you're not going to be happy.
You're going nowhere.
You're going to find yourself in positions where it's like, fuck, I don't want to be here. But if you start to like say, okay, stop listening to all the nonsense, all the bullshit, like you're going to end up on a path where you're like, well, this is actually making me happy. Doing things that actually make you happy, not just based on what someone else is saying they think you should do.
But also surround yourself by others that have the same motives, the same motivation. So like my team, now that I'm damn near almost fully independent, you know, I had to hire like 6 or 7 employees. And I had this talk with them the other day. Everybody's on this staff, including myself, everybody functions at a high level. We have fun, but notice everybody's at a fucking high level.
Yeah.
If you tailor off the path and you're not doing your job, you're out of here, man.
Yeah.
Your quote on the wall, which I love at Zoo Culture, run with us or run from us.
Yeah.
So like, it's like, if you can't keep up with me work ethic wise, you do not have a place there, man.
Yeah.
Trust me, there's fucking lions out there and I will find them. So if you're a zebra in lion clothing, you do not have a place with me. And that's with everything. Everyone
Absolutely.
I surround myself is smarter than me, more successful than me. You know, they're better comedians than me, better podcast. I don't surround myself with anyone who's lesser than me. Nobody, man.
Yeah.
Everyone's monsters.
I think it has to be that way. I mean, like I say this in your own life, like for people listening, whether you're like a successful podcaster, if you want to be a podcaster, whatever the fuck you're trying to do, if there's people in your circle right now that like every time you talk to them, they're like, I don't know, man, that sounds like a bad idea. That's a
get
dumb
rid of
idea.
Them.
Gotta get rid of them.
Yeah, it's a cancer. You have a cancer cell in your body.
Straight up. You gotta get rid of it. Like, even if it sucks, like, cause here's the problem with this. There's the problem with this is when this person goes, oh, but it's my mom, right? Or it's my brother. Now, you can't get rid of that person in your life, but you also have to learn how to be like, okay, when I can kind of turn this volume down a little bit.
You can separate from them.
And I have to understand that, okay, that's what this person believes. Because like everyone gets this when they're kids, when they're growing up in their adolescence, like, you know, obviously I don't think you would be this kind of father, but a father figure or a mother figure might be like, yo, you should do this. And you're like, nah, that's not really me. And you do something else left field. And they're like, that's like a bad idea.
Yeah.
Like I remember, not my mom. My mom was never like bad on what I wanted to do, but she was like, yeah, good luck. You know, we'll see.
Yep.
And like, I just think it's really important for people listening. Like, it's not, my mom is not a bad person. She's basing her opinions off what she knows and what she knows to be possible. But the world is so different nowadays. The landscape is so different nowadays that it's like, I have to move in a whole different way and not rely on what someone else said that I should or shouldn't do. And I just think it's really important for people to understand, like, if there's people in your circle, like I said, if it's a mom, if it's a brother, if it's a cousin, like, you got to turn the volume down a little bit and know where, okay, if that's truly not in line with like you and your heart, like, don't listen to it.
And also, if you can't get rid of those people in your life, you don't want it bad enough.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Because now you're going like, now you're, if you're not getting rid of them, you're affirming what they're saying by allowing them to stay in your life. And then you're giving yourself an excuse to not move forward. Because like, you can go, oh, like, well, he said that, so maybe not. You're just, so now you're holding yourself back.
Correct.
But I just think it's interesting, man. And whenever I talk to like successful people, you know, such as yourself or other people that I know, or people that I like really look up to, it's like, they always say the same fucking things, man. And I just think, I just want to try
it. It sounds
bring that
harsh, but the game's too tough, man. The game's too tough to waste time on that.
Yeah.
So it might sound harsh, but if you're trying to get where you're going, it's going to take some harsh
Do you ever see yourself,
decisions.
I always ask this question because do you ever see yourself not working?
No.
Yeah, I'd rather die.
Never.
I was talking to
I'm like a shark. If I stop moving, I'm going
to
die.
I was talking to a friend of mine who's a billionaire, like a like a multi-billionaire.
Oh, I'd probably stop then.
No, but he's no, dude. That's the fucked up thing.
He can't.
He can't.
Well, look
he,
at The Rock.
He's. I'm on the phone with him, and I was like, "Would you ever stop working?" He's like, "No. I'll die. When I stop working, I'm dead."
That's why he's successful.
This guy's like,
insane. Scrooge McDuck. Yeah,
insane.
Yeah, but also it's like, I think too, one of the reasons why it's kind of gone well for me too is like, I don't do anything that I don't want to do. Everything I do, I don't go, "Oh, I'm gonna do this and make tons of money." I do it because I love doing it. If money comes, fucking great.
That's the
but
key.
But if not, all that's good. I love doing this, man. I met great people and we've had a great time doing it. But I've never done anything where I'm like, "Oh, I'm going to make a ton of money doing this."
Yeah.
Ever. So for me, it's like the money's great. That's great. And I love to be paid for what I do and, you know, putting together all my shit. That's great. But also, I'd be doing it for free. So it's like I have nothing to retire from. This is what I do for fun.
This is a big important thing in success, and people who are listening always people always ask me this question in person. They say, "Yeah, I don't know what I want to do, or I want to do these things, but I don't know how to make money." And I remember when I first started making money on the internet through coaching people, I would get hit up all the time by people who knew I was successful at it. Maybe just because of the amount of followers I had, or the fact that I was the first person promoting like this online coaching thing in the fitness industry, and they would hit me up and they'd be like, "Yo, what do I do? Like, I bet you make so much money. Like, how do I do what you're doing?" Other fitness people. And I remember being like, "Dude, if the reason why you want to do this is to make money and not actually help people,
you're not going to make it.
You're done."
Yeah, you're in it for the wrong
reason. And that's the thing that's so significant, I think, in life now is like people get so caught up, especially with social media, in what other people have and how other people make money and how they do it. And they just try and mimic it. But like their heart's not truly in the thing that they're doing. Like if you ask me like this podcast shit, if I made no money doing this and I just did all my other stuff and made my money, I would still do this because I love this so much.
Yeah, I would do everything I do now for free.
Everything. Everything. But it's crazy because you can't tell someone that who's just starting out because they're like, "But I need to make money."
Yeah, it's tough.
So it's like a balance. What I'm saying is this to the people listening. I always told people, focus on the things that you truly enjoy. And when you're doing them, you're like, "Yo, this feels good."
Yep.
And then over time of doing that and like really, cause like you can't lie to yourself when you do something, you're like, "Whoa, I like me doing podcasts right now. I love the way I feel. My heart feels
but
good.
Also,
my body feels
people
good."
People will gravitate towards that cause it's natural. And they know, they realize it's not a money play.
Right. Yeah. So along that path, right, where that's happening, you don't have to make it about, "I got to make money." Like something will come naturally almost where it's like, "Oh, okay. I can monetize it like this."
Yep.
But if your initial intent is like, "I need to monetize this and I want to do what that person's doing."
You can smell that.
Yeah, you're just hitting the wall straight away.
You're not going to make it.
But it's crazy. I just think it's crazy that dynamic of success and obviously needing money but not making it about money.
It's fine balance.
It's crazy, man.
Yeah.
It's just, and all the successful people that I talk to and have conversations with, they're like, they all say the same shit.
Yeah, I think if you're like, if it's black and white, like you're a finance or stock guy, that makes sense. Like, "Hey, I got into this for money.
Of course.
I don't enjoy it. I'm just trying to get fucking rich." That's different. But for what we do, like being creative and the creative type and putting out content, you have to love it, man. You have to. It's too much of a grind. Like, we don't have 9 to 5s.
Dude, I'm 100% all the time. 24/7.
Yeah, 24/7.
Hey, you know that. She knows that.
How long have you worked for him? 3 months. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have to be.
Yeah, everyone is like, "This guy's crazy." But like, but I couldn't be any other way.
No.
I don't know how to be any other way. I don't want to be
in your
any
DNA,
other way.
Yeah.
I fucking love it.
Are we going to dial it down?
No, dude. No. I can only learn how to dial that bitch up.
Yeah.
No, it's just so fucking fun. And like sometimes you hit fucking walls, but like eventually when you get it, you're like, it's just so fucking enjoyable. I can't even describe the feeling.
Yeah, the thing for me, like with this whiskey, what fired me up about is like it's a language I don't speak. And these guys they have their black belt and my white belt come into it.
Yeah, like what's up?
Oh, I'm like, "Oh man, let's fucking
I'm gonna learn this shit.
Yeah, I'm gonna figure it out."
No, I love it. I'm going through a situation like in my business, like movement and transitioning of things, very very similar. And like you said, not having the black belt.
Yeah.
But like I'm in my mind, I'm like, "Oh, I'm gonna figure
me
this
too.
Out. 100%.
I have the phone, I'm like,
no
oh,
fucking
yeah.
doubt. Yeah. And I'm gonna be better than I ever was.
And that's why I told him, like, "You cannot pick it up and distribute it. You'll see what happens. I'll find someone."
Yeah, motherfucker.
I'll find your competitor.
That's
we'll
that mentality,
up.
Man.
Yeah. And it's not like a mean thing. I'm just like, "Yeah, bet against me. See what happens, man."
Yeah. How do we? I just want to teach more people about that kind of shit, man.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
If you could harness that and sell it, you'd be fucking Jeff
Bezos.
Yeah,
make
Bezos.
That like a. Make it. Yeah, dude. Put that shit in a pill. Holy shit. Put that in a pill and put it on Amazon. What?
Make it
what,
bank.
What's so fucking funny back here? He's like, "Put that shit in a pill." And just like, that's to be crazy if you could. If you could put that, like, that's like Limitless. It's like that fucking
say, it's
movie.
That Limitless
movie. Yeah, it's like insane. That movie was dope, by the way.
Yeah.
But anyways,
he's also just using Kratom, but whatever.
Okay. Was it?
I think so. Like, do you use Kratom?
I haven't used Kratom, but I know. Jacob, you did Kratom, right?
Yeah.
I do it every day.
No.
Every show, every day,
no.
Nonstop.
Right
now? I'm on it right now.
Oh, I'm on some mushrooms right now.
I'm on it nonstop.
How much do you take? Isn't that what people take to get off of, like, heroin and shit?
They can, yeah.
Yeah.
It's
Yeah, people. But I use it because it fires up my brain. Like at
Kratom.
Like yeah, I'm more sharp when I'm on it. I don't do anything without it.
Yeah, really.
Any like stand
and
up?
And you have the nicotine thing.
The
right?
Nicotine, yeah. Nicotine's weird because obviously an addictive drug. But I started that because obviously playing football for a long time, fighting. Like they found out like nicotine can help with the brain.
And, oh
like,
yeah.
Delaying like CT and stuff like that.
Yes.
This so I was like, say less.
Yeah.
So then I started using the patches. And then again, I didn't start using patches and like, oh, I'm going to get sponsored by them and work with this company. I started using it, fucked with it. And then naturally they saw me using it. And now they're a business partner. Like it's a,
that's incredible. Yeah. That's, yeah. And that's what we're just talking about.
Yeah.
It's something you genuinely like, whoa, I actually need
oh,
this.
I
use this.
Hard
I appreciate
and
this.
Just started talking about them. And now
I always see you with it. So it makes sense.
Yeah. Stay on it.
It's like an easy, and so that's an easy path. It's just,
it's organic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you actually do it. It's actually a part of your life.
Yep.
But yeah, that's, I think that's it, man. I'm really grateful that you came on the podcast.
Oh, I love you, man. I owe you. You've came on Fighting Kid twice.
Yeah.
Done two fight campaigns. At least
yeah,
I
yeah.
can do
I
dude.
Love it, man. But yeah, I'm grateful to call you a friend.
Yeah.
And
you're my boy.
And, you know, you're just a great dude, man. I want the internet to know that outside of the internet or whatever the fuck people say or, I mean, people don't really talk shit about you anyways, but I've known you for time now in person and you're just always been a very consistent person and
yeah,
I appreciate
man.
You.
Yeah, I got
and,
your back,
and that's
brother.
It, man.
Yeah. Yeah. No, are you moving to Austin? Like, is this going to be a weird thing? I lose another friend to Austin?
No, not yet. No, we got a lot more to do here. I'm going to go back and forth. Once I open the gym, I'll probably be there for about 6 months so that I can avoid,
bounce back and forth.
So I can avoid little old taxes in Cali.
Newsom's all,
He's like, okay, fuck, we're still going
to
get him.
And you're that fucking mask guy, huh?
But also I need to be there, regardless of the taxes, regardless, I do need
it's
to be there.
Good business move, yeah.
I need to be there while the gym opens to kind of set the tone. And then I'll be back and forth. Steve, I was just telling you before the podcast, he wants me to move into like a fucking random house in the valley here with him. Just film crazy ass content, which is like,
that'd be dope.
It'd be crazy. It'd be fun. So I was going to talk about when you're talking about the Joe Rogan thing and switching over. Cause remember he did the crazy rant.
Yeah. Crazy.
But at the end of the day, like it's needed. It's necessary to grow.
Like, yeah. I agree.
Like we said, man, those moments that where you're like, you're a hit and you're like, fuck, like there's a ton going on. She's joking about it.
Yeah.
There is so much going on in my life right now.
Yep.
But like, I know that on the other side of that, is that's where I want to be.
Yeah, it'll be
and
better.
That's what's gonna go.
You've been talking about doing it for a while anyway, so it's better they force your hand.
Yeah, they had to.
Yeah, you got this, dog.
Yeah.
I'll be there.
Yeah, you already know.
I'll be there.
Yeah, so
bitch.
That's it. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I appreciate you so much, man. You're a genuine fucking great dude.
You got it, brother.
And anything you need from me, you already know I got
you. Know
you.
This, man. So love you, brother.
Make sure you guys subscribe to the fucking podcast. I think I don't even know how it works. You click the little plus button. Drop a nice little review if you're on YouTube. Drop a comment, share, like, all that good shit. Make sure you're subscribed if you are not subscribed. Also, check out Brandon. You got
Thick Boy YouTube. Subscribe, smash the button, as the kids say.
Yeah, all that shit. Do the notification.
All my shows
bell,
are on
all
there.
That.
Yep.
And you got the podcast. How many? Whether you got the social, you got Instagram.
Yep. At Brendan Schaub, Thick Boy on YouTube, and then tour dates. I'm all over. I think next one we're in Everett, Washington, November 27th. We're outside Seattle.
Yep.
And then I end the year in Dania, Florida, which is Fort Lauderdale, Florida.
Yeah.
I'm bringing the New Year's in there. So get tickets fatkz.com.
Yeah, check them out. Thank you for all the love, guys. I appreciate all the support, genuinely. And thanks for
being love you guys. Here, stay thick, man.
Yeah, hell yeah.